Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's new...
Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. Today's episode, I think, very exciting, something that when we talked about it before, we've got some good responses from the listeners. But aviation, cybersecurity, and on we have Sagi Brody, who is a couple things you do, Chief Technology of Opti9, but then Technical Advisor for Cybiation. And I think that's the exciting part that we want to talk about. But welcome today. Thanks for joining.
Thanks, Chris. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Definitely. So cybersecurity for aviation. I'm sure there's a path that you got there. You didn't start there. But give us a little bit about your background and how you got to where you're at in life and, you know, what your interests were to get you there and how you've come to work with aviation cybersecurity.
Sure. Yeah. So I've been in the digital infrastructure space for about 25 years now. I was a co-founder and CTO of back then it was called a hosting company. Now you call it a fancy cloud company, a company called WebAir. And we started in the late 90s and we built up a platform to host applications in a secure and resilient manner with, you know, a high availability, disaster recovery, backups. We grew that business, focused on mid-market enterprise companies, did a lot of really fun things there around disaster recovery and public cloud. Eventually, we merged that business with two others, and now it's called Opti9. I'm still the CTO there. I'm still having fun. You know, that there's always interesting things happening in the disaster recovery space and with cloud. But I've also ended up doing some, you know, outside consulting just to keep my mind fresh, because, you know, 25 years is a long time. Always been interested in aviation and space. And a friend of mine mentioned that they were starting this company focused on cybersecurity for aviation. And I was like, wow, this is like worlds colliding. Something that I know about cyber and something that I've always seen as a hobby. And I'm like, what a great thing to kind of bring those two things together and be passionate about a cause.
Yeah. Hobby. So do you travel a lot for business? Are you a pilot? Do you fly model airplanes?
Yeah. When I was a kid, a lot of model airplanes, a ton of History Channel, flew some models, just been like an aviation geek and definitely a space geek, a lot of Star Trek, but don't have my pilot's license, but I think I'm going to go for it now. I definitely need to have some domain knowledge. And, After some of the vulnerabilities and interesting things I've seen related to cybersecurity for actual airplanes, now it's got me really wondered. And it's one thing to kind of see some of these vulnerabilities and information on a screen, but you know, I'm sure you're the same way. When you're a geek, you want to get your hands on something. You want to get out there in the trenches. It's one thing to understand it from an academic perspective, but you want to go, you know, press the buttons and turn the knobs and see how legitimate some of these things are.
Yeah. You know, I travel a lot, and watching the progression, something I want to ask you and see where we can go with, you know, as I'm on the airplane, for a certain number of years, they're like, don't turn on your phone, turn it off. It's dangerous, you know, it's going to mess up the aviation equipment. But now they're like, turn on your Wi-Fi, buy our service. You know, they've changed their tune, but the aircrafts don't seem to have changed much. And I always wonder how legitimate some of that was in the first place. Are you familiar with, you know, what you
think? Yeah, I mean, you know, it's an interesting question, and I've heard so many different answers. I don't know that the jury is out. Well, I mean, I think there is, but, you know, you've heard theories, you've heard these conspiracy theories of the cell phone companies have asked the airline carriers to request that the passengers do that, because as you're taking off and you're still, you know, within a few thousand feet, the plane is passing over all these different cell phone towers, and you get you get a big ton of users connecting to each tower, you know, sort of oversubscribing them, and it causes a headache. And then you have the, you know, the legitimate, you know, theory of, you know, the radio frequency, that the phones are transmitting on is interfering with the avionics. And I think that is the actual reason. And I think there is, you know, there is legitimacy to it. I mean, obviously they ask you to keep the RF antenna off for the entire flight, but I will tell you that radio frequency, you know, the actual communication between the aircraft and the ground and aircraft to aircraft, and this is related to you know, just signals that the planes put out, like ADS-B and TCAS and some others, you know, that is a extremely vulnerable component of the airplane. And these are unencrypted messages with no authentication, which the airplane is relying upon to make, you know, critical decisions. In fact, 3 months ago, there was an event. There was an event where you know, and this has been around for a while. People have been talking about radio frequency jamming for a while, jamming GPS signals, jamming these other RF signals. One of them is cool. One of the RF frequencies is called or messages is called TCAS, and this is when the planes are sending out messages to each other, basically determining that they're too close to each other, and they agree upon a mitigation plan. How about you go up and I'll go down, and the autopilots make those changes. So imagine that sort of unauthenticated communication where you're basically telling a plane what to do. So jamming has been around for a while, but what's different now is that there's actually spoofing of those messages, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take a break here from our sponsor. We're going to come back, and I don't want to lose this, but we'll get back into this. Be right back.
Blockframe technology offers next-generation blockchain-managed trust and security. Unique non-fungible tokens are used to secure software bills of materials to provide data quality and security for every transaction in your supply chain. Deploy advanced peer-to-peer product security, scale zero trust capability to millions of IoT devices, allow vendor tracking and accountability, and rapidly reset from compromise. Unchangeable, time-sequenced blockchain data provides next-generation security using machine learning trust algorithms and audit analytics. Start securing your supply chain today by contacting Blockframe at www.blockframetech.com.
Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. On today, before the break, we're getting into an interesting talk about, you know, the automatic adjustment from autopilots from unauthenticated messages. I wanted to let you finish up on that conversation, but we're here with Sagi Brody, who is working with as technical advisor for Cyviation. Continue on that line where you were going about the messages unauthenticated and being spoofed now, and where are we going with that?
Yeah, so there was an event that occurred a few months ago where 20 commercial and private aircraft, all sorts of different aircraft, 777, 747, Gulfstreams, Falcons, Goldwing Expresses, they received spoofed navigational GPS data to the aircraft. And, you know, long story short, that caused the cascading failure where other systems in the airplane that are designed to determine the airplane's position basically got confused because they use the GPS. They're supposed to be independent. Supposed to be like standalone components that determine position and heading on their own. But not too long ago, the manufacturer said, hey, we have this GPS data, which is highly accurate. Why don't we use that as a factor too? They started doing that. And what's happened now is these devices, the inertial reference systems, are, you know, when the faked data, the spoofed GPS data came in, it just confused the hell out of them. And it caused them to fail, which then caused clock failures and complete navigational failures. And these 20 or so planes had to really, you know, just radio into air traffic control and have them manually guide them to where they needed to go. They lost all navigational systems. One of them was close to the Iraq-Iranian border, and they almost ended up in Iranian airspace without clearance because of this. They were 80 miles off course. So scary stuff, right?
This was done from a ground-based transmission or another aircraft, or
Yeah, one it could have been one or the other, but it is, it is, obviously something that, it's, if you think about IP and, internet traffic spoofing, when, that obviously it was, again, same sort of thing. It was talked about. People knew that it could be possible, but they only had done it in the web. And then all of a sudden you started to see it happening in the wild, and then it became a more common thing. So this is really the same. It was theoretical, and a few months ago it happened. Within the span of 2 weeks, it happened to 20 planes.
Interesting. So that's kind of like, one of the things we that getting into attack vectors, that's one, but there's a couple more. Talk about different ways or other ways that we can that we are running into either potential or actual attacks coming on to aircraft.
Yeah, so that's certainly a big one, the external communication. The others are going to be physical tampering. There is really no assumed trust when it comes to the aircraft. If you have physical access to an aircraft, there are just so many ways that you can physically tamper and modify these systems. And it doesn't necessarily mean you can brick a component, but you can also, change the firmware to cause all sorts of, strange and bad issues. And so a lot of these devices are not password protected, or they have default passwords. And again, if you have physical access to it, then it is assumed that you should be allowed to do whatever you want to it. So I'd say physical tampering, supply chain issues, and just trusted relationships with your vendors and subcontractors for the same reasons.
So if we unpack those, I mean, it sounds like you're painting a very scary picture. Should I even be on an airplane? But they're operating. We've been doing this for a while. So what is it that makes it continue, even though these major, sounds like major problems exist?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's any different than any other industry, that had these. It's going through a maturity process, right? And unfortunately, oftentimes it takes awareness and sometimes even, minor events to occur to get people to understand what the risks are. And then eventually, hopefully, you could take either side here, but obviously regulation can be helpful, and regulations are coming. Actually, EASA, which is Europe's version of the FAA, has specific cybersecurity regulations for aircrafts going live next year, and that's good. But I mean, we have been seeing minor issues. I don't know if you remember the, it got some press, the issue with American Airlines, where they had this bout of moaning sounds coming out of their PA systems on some of the planes for a few weeks. It was sort of like ghoulish, ghostly moans, and no one could identify what was going on. It was later determined that those planes had the PA systems amplifiers all replaced a few weeks before, and so somebody injected, as a prank, I would guess, a different audio file there. And so you look at that on the surface, and you're like, all right, it's just someone screwing around, but in reality, that is a supply chain problem, a different version of the software, or the content was introduced into a component, and it was brought onto these planes and installed. And where are the checks and balances? Where's the checksums? Where's the verification? And if something so silly can be done, what else can be done?
So what is the process supply chain for aircraft? Can you elaborate on what is in security measures in there?
Well, I think it, you know, it's these are fairly, I'd say the protection up until this point has, pretty much been sort of, security by obscurity, right? Nobody really knows what the vulnerabilities are. These are not open source systems. At Civiation, we have a lab. It's actually back in Israel, where the real smart guys and girls, they're doing R&D. They have these components in their lab. They're basically creating digital twins of all these of all the avionics and the planes, and they're looking at how they're interconnected. And if you were to compromise one system, what else would you have access to? And that's they're doing that to create risk scores, really, for the various vulnerabilities that they're finding. But going back to your question, I would say the control mechanism has been obscurity. There is really a lack of awareness of who takes ownership for what when it comes to these components. You know, in fact, we're not even tracking the versions. If a plane goes in for maintenance and a physical component is replaced, you know, was there regression on the software version that it was running? Was it running a secure version and now it's running an insecure version? No one is sort of watching this holistically at a high level, and taking ownership and accountability. So I do think that's all. I think it's going to have to change, and I think once more these minor issues hopefully become, you know, more apparent.
Yeah. Let's take a break for here from our sponsors. We'll be right back. Talk about that issues with supply chain a little bit, maybe some of your recommendations on where things could go. Be right back.
Blockframe technology offers next-generation blockchain-managed trust and security. Unique non-fungible tokens are used to secure software bills of materials to provide data quality and security for every transaction in your supply chain. Deploy advanced peer-to-peer product security, scale zero trust capability to millions of IoT devices, allow vendor tracking and accountability, and rapidly reset from compromise. Unchangeable, time-sequenced blockchain data provides next-generation security using machine learning trust algorithms and audit analytics. Start securing your supply chain today by contacting Blockframe at www.blockframetech.com.
Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. On today, Sagi Brody, the Chief Technology Officer, Opti9, and also Technical Advisor for Cyviation. And you show me your shirt. You got to put that on screen. Show me the yeah, Cyviation. So a play on words with cybersecurity and aviation.
Yeah, you know, was not my idea, but definitely I think it makes also, and it's funny because when you look at, you know, some of the decks of the company, you'll see it sort of has like these overlapping concentric circles, you know, Cyviation and I'm sorry, cybersecurity and aviation. And I think, you know, I think you see it a lot, you know, I think, and by the way, I think there is a lot of sort of general cybersecurity best practices that can be applied to the aviation ecosystem that will help tremendously here. I'll give you an example. When maintenance companies, you know, perform maintenance on planes, a lot of times they're plugging in their laptops into these critical avionics networks. In fact, most planes need to have their internal navigational database updated every 28 days. And so someone is literally plugging in a laptop and uploading a new file. And so if you think about that laptop that's connecting, you know, you think about traditional cyber attacks and ransomware, right? I mean, think about a ransomware strain that gets into a traditional corporate IT environment. Maybe it's the maintenance company, and maybe that ransomware is set to look for a specific avionics component, right? Now it's sitting dormant on the laptop. You plug it in, and now it can, you know, it can infect an aviation component, right? And so just having things in place like EDR, like an NDR, and having an MSSP monitoring those maintenance companies and the, you know, the aviation managers and operators networks, that will go a long way. I mean, we can have a whole other conversation around checksums and checking the database and not assuming that it is correct. I mean, that's another thing. But let's start with the basics. Let's ensure that every layer in the supply chain is already running, you know, is already conforming to traditional cyber best practices.
Mm-hmm. So I remember, you know, it's been, you know, years where I've been talking to people, and literally probably, you know, over a decade ago, I remember hearing the same type of things about aviation security. What has been improved? Where has it been going? Is it just kind of still Wild West and, you know, companies that do aviation think about flying and not about the technical aspects? You know, what has been happening in the industry to improve some of these things?
So I think on the commercial side and on the larger side of business aviation, there has been a large investment into cybersecurity, mostly around, you know, threat intelligence for the company itself, and mostly around all of the various internal systems. Ironically, though, I do feel like the most critical asset, the airplanes themselves, you know, that's sort of a walled off environment. The SOCs, the folks that are working for these airlines, that are there to, you know, to protect it, they're not really monitoring what's going on in the actual plane. what's happening in the internet, you know, the internet connectivity, the IFAC of the users, that's different. And like, you know, there are traditional firewalls and DDoS protection in there, but the actual control systems that are operating the plane, no. So what's been done with that? Not much, but you know, candidly, there hasn't really been, because it's been so, it's such a closed off environment. It had, you know, it hasn't really come under attack. But you know, for Civiation, you know, us finding, and we found tons of vulnerabilities. You know, like, yeah, I'll tell you one. We found a vulnerability in a cabin management system, for business jets, very popular business jets, and there's an Ethernet port in the cabin accessible to anyone, and you got the system sitting on 10.0.0.5 default login and password. And if you get in there, you know, it's open to Telnet. You get in there, you can do some funny things, you know, and immediately I think everyone's head goes, well, it's the cabin, you know, who cares about that? It's like, well, I can set off the fire suppression system in the cabin. I can set off the fire alarm. I can disable the plumbing, the bathrooms. I can take over the PA system. And so if I'm trying to disrupt the flight, prevent it from taking off, if I'm trying to force someone to make an emergency landing, you know, that will get the job done. On the avionics side, there's always nasty vulnerabilities around computers which are controlling the flaps and the slats and the autopilot, like really bad stuff. But those will, you know, all this certainly requires physical, you know, physical access. But because the checks and balances from a vendor assessment are not in place yet, to me, that is you know, that is something that needs to be fixed.
So, and a lot of, you know, as far as, and I'm kind of elaborating on things I know, but also framing a question that you can respond to in any way you feel fit. But having heard that, you know, the products, the aircraft is a product, the amount of time it takes to get an upgrade, even in software, is difficult because of the amount of work they have to go through to say it's a new product. So really, the protection then being it's a closed system, right? That it's sold as an aircraft, the whole thing, and you're not allowed to put software on it or upgrade it without it being a whole new product or whatnot. So even a lot of the software that's operated is very old, but it's something that worked when they built it and it all worked as a closed product. So it sounds like, you know, when we say that's, you know, earlier you said regulation might be needed. That's what regulation has already done. It's, you know, made it so it's almost difficult to improve it over time and incrementally. What's your thoughts on that? I mean, is it more that we need to go towards it's a closed product and close it down, or open it up so we can incrementally improve it?
Well, you know, looking at a lot of the vulnerabilities that we found, if, you know, and in a very sort of superficial, surfacey way, just, you know, with the access that we've had, if we can find these things out, others can't, right? And and you know, for the ransomware gangs, it's just a matter of time. If, you know, again, you play a numbers game, you send out these, you know, like you can find out who are the largest aircraft maintenance companies very easily, and you can target them and potentially, you know, ship some ransomware that looks for these things or malware. But you know, I'm not trying to like portray doom and gloom. I do think, and to your point, it's going to take a very long time for the OEMs to fix these vulnerabilities, like years. They don't just push an over-the-air update to an aircraft, right? But I mean, the good news is, there are the training and workarounds, and just general cyber best practices will go a long way here. And you know, one of the things that we do at Civiation is we will do a vulnerability assessment against the physical aircraft. And we actually do it remotely without any physical access, just based on documentation that the operators can provide. We take the documentation, we create a digital twin, and then we show them, you know, just like any other you know, vulnerability audit or risk assessment. We say, here's your biggest risks, prioritized. And yes, you can go back to the OEM and say, you know, send me an update, but more immediately impactful is here are operational workarounds that you can put in place, and let's put your staff, your ground crews, and your flight staff through training so that they understand what to do, what not to do, and how to deal with these issues. And you know, like everything else with cyber, that will go a very long way.
Interesting. So the assessment, you know, I hear over and over again, we're assessing, we're trying to plan. What's the the whole business model, which we struggle with in cybersecurity, our business models are in predictive. What could happen? What could go wrong? How can we assess? How can we provide recommendations for what's wrong with it? How do we fix? How do we move forward? Is there a design process of making it better, or are we still at the stage where we're trying to understand what the problem is?
Well, I think it's both. I do think, the example that we gave regarding the GPS spoofing at the beginning, I mean, that is known, and that's been known for a while that it can happen, probably close to 10 years, but it had never happened in the wild. And I've spoken to OEMs of those specific avionics, and they've been talking about, yeah, we're gonna, you know, we are gonna put out new products that mitigate that, and add some additional improvements. But you know how it is, like, to get an entire industry to agree to a new standard, that's nearly impossible. One of the things we're coming out with actually is real-time IDS for, in the cockpit for the messages, right? If you can sit on the bus and look for, anomalous sorts of information and messages and data, and then obviously you can help the pilots. And there is, and for that specific issue, by the way, there was one pilot that experienced it more than once, and he quickly came up with a workaround. He basically, said to the others and to really the industry, if this happens to you, here is a procedure that you can go through. If you catch it fast enough, here's what you can do on the IRS to reject that positioning data and prevent the catastrophic failure. So again, I do think training will go a long way. But what's interesting is, in what you said, is a lot of the stuff is very old technology. It's just, sort of now under the spotlight. If you look on the flip side of it, with what's happening with hyper-connected air mobility, with these new, sort of autonomous air taxis, the eVTOLs, electric vertical takeoff, which are going live in a year or two. Now you have this other problem where they're so complex. Now you need to secure those just as good, if not better, right? And so it's interesting.
Are they using, so that's a good kind of thought going into those new aircraft and things like that. Are we using the same systems, and how safe are those going to be when they hit the market in a year or so?
Well, those companies are greenfield, right? And they're doing everything, I don't know, like web 2.0-ish, right? Like, they're not, they're building everything from the ground up, and they're highly connected and, talking about AI, and they're running all their navigational data through, through big data, right? So like, they're like the Teslas of the aviation industry. And so I do think that for them, on the surface, they're not going to be susceptible to the same sort of vulnerabilities that at least aviation has seen in some of the existing, legacy aircraft. But because they are so highly connected, they are susceptible to a whole different breed of issues that can be even nastier, because you're talking about autonomous, vehicles now, right? So I don't know more about it, but I do know that one of the vendors, and they're really cool vendors, one of them is planning on having these things go live for the Paris Olympics, and fly some of the athletes to and from, the arenas within the metro on these autonomous aircraft, which is really cool.
The cool factor is high. So,
Yeah.
as far as what you do, who your clients are, what services you offer. Go ahead and do a shout out for how people can engage with you, what types of people you're looking to engage with, and what they can get from your interaction.
Yeah. So on the aviation side, we are, like I said before, we are providing vulnerability assessments for aircraft fleets. We are working with commercial operators as well as private business charter fleets. And basically, we're going to help them meet the requirements that EASA is putting out. The TSA has also put out regulations as well. And the FAA definitely has stuff coming down the pipe. So we will basically provide them with a fleet risk assessment, show them all the vulnerabilities, and then we will train their staff so that they know what to look for, how to work around them. And we are coming out with that IDS IPS system, to be sort of the real time in flight, and really be the bridge between us. As I said before, a lot of these companies have SOX and NOX, and they pay a lot for threat intel products. So we aim to be the bridge between that existing IT security capability and the physical aircraft through that real-time SIM integration.
And how would they get in touch with you?
You can find me on LinkedIn or email me at it's sagi.b@civiation.aero.
Okay. Is there a website for Civiation?
Yep, civiation.aero. Gotta love that. You gotta love that domain-specific TLD, which is cool.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for joining today. It's been a great conversation, and look forward to interfacing with you more in the future.
You too, Chris. Thanks so much.
All right. Bye.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.